The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Boot computer, list of today's guests, signing in chat room, lining up news articles, checking level, adjusting camera, secure wire connection, restart computer, checking video feed.
With all she's got to do, you'd think Nicole Sandler was a one-woman band. Well, she is, and she's ready for another show. And now, here's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
All right. Well, welcome to a Wednesday. It's a weird, weird day. The news broke about maybe an hour or two ago that a member of the progressive media community was killed today. Eric Bollert apparently was riding his bicycle and a car hit him and it killed him. I know, you know, Eric Bollert used to come on my show regularly. I looked back through the archives and around 2013, thereabouts, he was at Media Matters and he was a regular on my show. Then, I don't know, I have no idea what happened, but a few years ago, he blocked me on Twitter. And I was kind of perplexed. I mean, I have no idea why. And now, I guess I'll never know. You know, Eric Bollert does a weekly, or did a weekly hit on Stephanie Miller's show. And you'd see him everywhere. I mean, in the usual circles, because he wrote about and reported on media as it pertains to our world. And boy, there's, you know, it's a big story these days because our media, I think, is very much responsible for the mess we're in now. The media, not what we do here, not the other shows that you may listen to, but, you know, the corporate mainstream media who thrives on propaganda and disinformation. And that's what he did. So it's very sad. And I feel awful. Now, you know, this just shows you life is so precious, you know. And so for years, I didn't think a whole lot about it. And I thought one of these days I'll run into him again and ask him what, you know, what happened. And now I'll never know. So I feel horribly for his family. I guess he's got two kids and a wife he leaves behind. It's just terrible. And you know, and I will always have this regret that I never reached out and said, you know, what did I do something to offend you? I know some people get put off because I can be somewhat combative at times. And maybe I tweeted something one day that rubbed them the wrong way. It's very possible I do that to a lot of people, not intentionally, but yeah, you know, and now I'll never know. See, that's why it's so important to say what you want to say when you have the chance, because you never know when it's going to be taken away from you. He was only 57, too young. And, you know, the tributes on Twitter and everywhere are pouring in. You know, from everything I know about him, he was a great guy, except for that little thing about blocking me on Twitter. But, yeah, I'm sure he had his reasons. Oh, it's just terrible. Just terrible. So I'm not going to dwell on it. There's not much more I can say. I don't know what happened to the driver. I just, the whole thing is tragic, but we're living in tragic times. You know, this comes on the heels of, this massacre that we are seeing the evidence of on television, in photographs and everything over there in, Ukraine. In a town called Buka, I think it's called. But it's not only there. That's the one that we heard about. That's the one that we saw pictures from. But if it happened there, my mind can't even grasp how many other little towns around Ukraine suffered the same fate. So, you know, yesterday I told you I hadn't heard from Tanya, who left the hostel that she owns in Kyiv and got out. She went to Poland, and then her sister flew her to the UAE, where she lives I'm drawing a blank right now, in Dubai. So, and she just sort of went dark. I hadn't heard from her in days, and I thought maybe me checking in with her is like pressuring her, because it's the last thing I want to do. You know, I want to let her know that there are many of us out here who care about her, who are worried, who are concerned, and, you know, who want to make sure she's okay. But I don't want to put pressure on her to make her think that, oh, shit, I got to check in with this woman over in the United States who keeps bugging me. So I told her, you know, if that's the case, I understand. I'll back off. I'm here. Should you want to talk? And she said, no, please don't take it personally. It's me. She's going through a horrible time. I can only imagine. Right. So this morning I got a message from her. Of course, when I woke up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and then 2 minutes later came the ding, and she messaged me. And she said, I got new hellish news from Poland. 40 children were brought to the hospital in Poland. The oldest girl is 14 years old. All parents were killed in front of the children. And they said that you bitches respect Russia. And then she added, the children were raped many times and their teeth were pulled out. There are no words. And then she said the children were brought from Buka and Gostomel. So Gostomel is another town that we've not really heard much about, but we know what's going on. Yes, Tanya is incredibly stressed. And look, PTSD has got to be with all these people. I read another story somewhere where, you know, a little kid was trying to play and then got all worried and said, when are the bombs going to start falling? You know, these children are destroyed for the rest of their lives. And then there's Putin going about his business, whatever the fuck it is he does. And then there are the despicable. You know what? Hillary Clinton used the word deplorable. That's not strong enough for these people. These people are the scum of the earth. So yesterday, I played you a little video of this some guy walking around with a microphone who asked these Trump supporters, who would you support for, you know, president between Vladimir Putin and Joe Biden? And this woman said, Putin. Because Biden, you know, oh my God. Well, this same guy, and I still don't know who he is. I'm going to have to do a little research and find out who this guy is, has another video up. I don't know where he was. He was at some Trump event, maybe outside one of his rallies, which thankfully we're not hearing a whole lot about these days because, number one, very few people are showing up. And number two, maybe the media is finally getting the message. You keep promoting him and we wind up with him in office. Anyway, this guy is at this thing. These people are wearing Trump t-shirts. So he asks these two people about January 6th, right? So their opinion on what happened January 6th and who was responsible for it. And just listen to how these people have been lied to. And then they regurgitate the lies that they're told.
A lot of that was Antifa.
Hold on. I want to go back to the beginning because I cut off the question.
How do you all feel about the events of January 6th?
A lot of that was Antifa.
Yeah, right.
Really?
Really?
Yes.
Why would Antifa interrupt the certification of an election in which their candidate won? Wouldn't they want him to be certified?
Just want to disrupt in any way.
Oh,
possible.
I see. That's how it works.
Do you think Antifa wanted him to be president? I guess is what I'm asking.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. What?
So why would they interrupt the certification of the vote on January 6th?
I have a different view of things.
What is if you is just like
she has a different view of things?
If you have a
yeah.
Okay.
Doesn't make sense, right?
He has got no answer.
Like why would they do that?
Well,
Well, oops. That's when we could use the Rick Perry oops. But, you know, it's not only the poor idiots, the stupid schmucks who've been misled because they watch Fox or listen to Newsmax or any other of these propaganda outlets. It's in Congress, right? This mindset is in Congress. And thankfully, we've got people in Congress like Jamie Raskin who are going to call it out for the bullshit that it is. Listen to this moment from I think this was today, Jamie Raskin speaking out.
The general lady, I think, said something about the Russian hoax or Russian collusion. I accept the heckling, Mr. Speaker, that's all right. Because if she wants to continue to stand with Vladimir Putin and his brutal, bloody invasion against the people of Ukraine, she is free to do so. And we understand there is a strong Trump-Putin axis in the general lady's party. She wants to continue to stand with Vladimir Putin, Donald Trump. That is her prerogative.
Oh, yeah.
But please do it on your own time, forthwith.
Forthwith. Yes. Please do
Mr.
it on...
Speaker.
Oops. Okay. So that was Jamie Raskin calling out Marge Q. Green. Because she is spewing this kind of propaganda, right? But, you know, it's everywhere. So, Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, she's constantly sparring with, the idiot who works for Fox. I thought I had two clips from her. Here's one example. I think this one's from yesterday. The kind of shit questions that she has to deal with every day. And it's, I give her a lot of credit, as much credit as I gave to Ketanji Brown Jackson when she was questioned on some bullshit by Ted Cruz. And she went, Senator? And there was that 5-second pause, which is an eternity when it's a situation like that. And you could just see the gears going in her head. It's like, all right, this man is a piece of shit, and I know what I want to say to him, but if I say it, then I blow my future on the Supreme Court. So I'm just going to stare him down, and I'm going to smile, and I'm going to tell him in the nicest possible way that he is a fucking asshole. And that's sort of what Jen Psaki does with the Ducey son. By the way, can you imagine if it was the son of Joe Scarborough? I'm just throwing a name out there. Just somebody who's on, a perceived liberal channel, which MSNBC most certainly is not. But, how they'd react. There's no reciprocity here. They just go for the jugular and ignore it when it's one of their own. But here's an example of the kind of shit that Jen Psaki has to put up with from Peter Ducey, really every day. This is just lovely.
And what about this new law in Florida? At what age does the White House think that students should be taught about sexual orientation and gender identity?
Well, I would say, first of all, Peter, we have spoken to the Don't Say Gay bill in the past, I believe is what you're referring
yes.
to, and made clear that as we look at this this law, what we think it's a reflection of is politicians in Florida propagating misinformed, hateful policies that do absolutely nothing to address the real issues. The Department of Education is well positioned and ready to evaluate what to do next, and its implementation, whether its implementation violates federal civil rights law. But I would note that parents across the country are looking to, national, state, and district leaders to support our nation's students to ensure that kids are treated equally in
uh-huh.
schools, and that is certainly not. This is not a reflection of that.
And so, just the last one. So, if you guys oppose this law that bans classroom instruction about sexual orientation and gender identity in K through 3. Does the White House support that kind of classroom instruction before kindergarten?
Oh, my God.
Do you have examples of schools in Florida that are teaching kindergartners about sex education?
I'm just asking for the president.
Well,
I think that's a relevant question.
Yes.
Because I think this is a politically charged, harsh law.
You think?
That is putting parents and LGBTQ plus kids in a very difficult, heartbreaking circumstance.
Disgusting.
And so I actually think that's a pretty relevant question.
That's absolutely disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. But today, there was another question that, would certainly take anybody aback. And the person who asked it was from CBS. I'm going to have to start calling it CBS, not News, too, because they're the idiots who hired Mick Mulvaney. But from CBS, the reporter's name is Scott Portnoy, and I believe he's the current president of the White House Correspondents Association, which makes this even more heinous. Listen to this and how, and I don't necessarily agree, but the fact that he's asking, when do we start dropping bombs? It just shocked me.
Put a finer point on some of the questions you've so far been asked. Why shouldn't the images of the atrocities from Bucha compel a worldwide, unified, coalition, kinetic response?
You mean a military war? Tell me more about what you mean.
Sure. A military response led by the United States and the international partners.
As in bringing military troops on the ground from the United States and NATO.
Uh-huh.
Well, the president has described outrageous things. You've called them atrocities. You've said
they are.
We should brace ourselves for worse. Why not?
I think what the president's objective is and his responsibility is to make decisions that are in the interests of the United States and the national security of the United States and the American people. And that is not to go to war with Russia. It is to do everything in our power to hold them accountable, to support efforts through international systems to do exactly that, and to provide military assistance, security assistance, and support to the Ukrainian people and the Ukrainian government. That's exactly what we're doing. But it is not in our interests or in the interests of the American people for us to be in a war with Russia. Go ahead.
She's so good. And I'm sorry that she's leaving. Because we could have used Jen Psaki around there for a little while longer. Okay, and I love this. Chris Frederick in the chat room says, this man has never had sex. Probably not. All right, with that, I think it's time for a bit of Wednesday wisdom, don't you?
What's that, Leonardo? Who's Nicole Sandler's next guest? Why, it's Digby, ooh, of course. Who's Digby? Observe, Leonardo. That's Dig for Dig and B for B, Digby.
I made sure it worked today. Hey, Digby.
Hey, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Oh, okay.
It's just, life is a roller coaster, you know? And these days, it seems like we're just continuously going downhill on the roller coaster. It's just one horrific thing after another.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, you've heard about Eric Bullard, I assume.
I did. Yeah. I did. And it just shows. I was telling the listeners at the beginning, he used to come on my show all the time. I'm talking 10 years ago when he was at Media Matters, he was on with me regularly. And then something happened. I don't know what it was, but some years ago he blocked me on Twitter. And I always thought one of these days I'm going to, get in touch with him and ask what up, And now I'll never know. And I feel really bad that, now he's dead and I will never be able to clear up whatever prompted him to block me. I don't know what I did to offend him, but now I won't know.
That's very strange because, it seems unlike him. And no? I wonder if maybe it was an accident of some sort, sometimes people do that sort of
because,
mass blocking.
Yes, right.
Where they block. So maybe you just got picked up in some kind of a mass block.
That's possible.
I knew Eric for years since I started blogging and we had met. In fact, he interviewed me for his book, Bloggers on the Bus, which featured me and I think John Amato, Jane Hampshire, a bunch of people back in 2008.
The OG gang.
Yeah, the OG gang, and it's kind of an interesting book. It's a real time capsule. But he came to LA, and you know, we hung out, and we had met each other many times at various gatherings, you know, the conventions and confabs, you know. And so we've been friends, and he and you know, most recently he'd had this newsletter that was actually doing very well, and I featured it a lot on my blog because his. You know, he never really flinched when it came to critiquing the media, even when, you know, it may not, you know, it was easy to do it during the Trump years, right?
Right.
But during the Obama years and the Biden years, it was a little bit more difficult because, you know, there's always a fear if you're sort of an activist type or you have a, you know, a certain ideological, you know, left-wing ideological bent, you find that you don't really want to, you know, go after people who were in a position to actually hurt your cause, and he never flinched from that. And his, I'm really going to miss his media critiques of this current era because they were so good.
Right.
And it is a very, very, very sad thing. He was only 57.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it just goes to show you how incredibly fragile life is. You know,
yes.
Everybody just. Enjoy every minute of it, even the bad minutes. Enjoy them because, you know.
And don't think that you can ask, you know, next week or next month about something, you know, between you and somebody that you used to be friendly with. Because, no, you can't necessarily. By the way, Terry just emailed me. He wasn't hit by a car. He was hit by a train.
And she
sent me the article from NorthJersey.com. A New Jersey transit train near the town's Wachtung Avenue last night.
It happened at like at 9:30 or something at night.
Oh, my God.
I have no idea what the circumstances were, but it's pretty awful. And, you know, he had, you know, a couple of kids. And happily married. I mean, it's just the whole thing is just a very... It's a very tragic thing, and, you know, you think about that. I mean, that's a very individual tragic thing of somebody that we know and have worked with, and, you know, you can just you just go ahead and think about that across the board, what's going on in the world, and it's all, you know, it makes you think, right?
Right. Well, this just shows you how random it is, because we expect, you know, people who've been sick to be the ones who die, not someone to get hit by a train on his bicycle.
I mean, just randomly. I mean, that's just, it's just awful. But then what isn't awful, Nicole? Tell me.
Right now?
Give me something.
I wish. I don't know. I really don't know anything that's not awful right now. And it's a horrible thing to say. But Digby, on every front, first there's what's going on in Ukraine, which is just heartbreaking. We haven't spoken in a while. We haven't spoken since the war started. So you know how I sometimes call hotels around the world when there are things going on? Well, I called this hostel in Kyiv, and I met this woman, Tanya, who owns the place, and we've stayed in touch. We text on the Telegram app, and she and her husband fled Kyiv, and they went to a small town, a rural area, a little village somewhere, and they stayed there hidden for a week or so, and then the bombs started falling there, and then they moved closer to Lviv, and then her husband finally convinced Tanya and her friend, who also came out with them, and her little boy, to go to Poland. The men couldn't go, but they went, and now Tanya's in Dubai, because her sister lives there and sent her plane tickets for the three of them. So, but she's horribly depressed. Her husband is still in Ukraine. She hasn't been apart from him for more than 15 days in 10 years. You know, her whole world's falling apart. And morning, she sent me a message. You know, first of all, she's been so super depressed. I mean, it's just that sometimes I hide in myself, so I live the pain. I mean, she's obviously hurting, as so many people are. But this morning she sends me a message. It says, "Oh my God, I know the news from she said, "I got hellish news from Poland. 40 children were brought to the hospital in Poland. The oldest girl is 14 years old. All their parents were killed in front of the children. And they said that you bitches respect Russia." And then The children were raped many times, and their teeth were pulled out.
What?
The children were brought from Bucha and Gostomel. And the thing is, we heard about Bucha or Buka, or however you say it, because we saw all the pictures and everything. But that's just one little town. This has probably happened in villages all throughout this country where the Russians occupied these towns and cities for at least a week before they went wherever they went to out east. So it just, you think about the human toll and what's going on over there, and not only the people who've been tortured and hurt and killed by the Russians, but the ones who are living, who have to go on living after witnessing shit like this.
I mean, it's a nightmare. And you think about it, for the last 20 years, we've been witnessing this in one room, and actually 30 years. In fact, I wrote about for Salon today, I just mentioned it glancingly because I was talking about the right wing and how they react to these things. And I'm reminded of what happened in the Baltics during the 1990s. And you had Srebrenica, and you had, you know, the war crimes that were committed in, you know, by Serbia and then in Kosovo, and the ethnic cleansing that took place.
Yep.
And then, of course, in the 2000s, we had 9/11, and we had the Iraq invasion, you know, which was equally brutal to what we're seeing. You know, we've had Syria and what the horrors that happened there, and that was a difficult one because we didn't have the access to the actual, you know, the pictures in the news as it was happening the way we do in Ukraine. But I think it's pretty similar. That seems to be the Russian approach, which is just, you know, just total devastation and, you know, just complete leveling of the country. And now we have this, and of course it's happening in Europe. So, you know, the echoes of, you know, European wars of the past are right there upon us in this kind of behavior. So, it's kind of overwhelming. And I think it's awful. And I don't, you know, we're sitting here in the nuclear age, right?
Yes.
I mean, you think about World War II, right? You think about, well, you know, it took the Allies a while to get going, and then blah, 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 blah. But we're in a completely different situation now because we have, you know, Russia's a nuclear power and a really massively well-armed nuclear power. And that changes the whole equation. Everything is different because of that. You can't just assume that, you know, it's going to be a land war in the same way that World War II was. Not that that was anything, you know, any kind of a picnic, but, you know, you've got that. You've also got nuclear power plants all over the place.
Yes, and we had a very close call. The first week of their bombing, they hit this nuclear power plant, which has not one but six reactors in it, the biggest in all of Europe, and there was a fire surrounding it, and, you know, and they're shooting at the Ukrainians who are trying to fight the fire. So we narrowly averted a huge nuclear disaster there. I mean, I thought it was all over that night.
I was too. I mean, I was riveted that night watching television going, oh my God, is this happening?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is like, you know, it's just crazy. And, you know, there's, and so that, you know, you can draw all these parallels, but the nuclear aspect of this makes this, you know, a very different, you know, sort of set of data that you'd have to take into account when you're trying to think about what to do about it. And then there's this other thing happening, Nicole, which is really terrifying to me because, you know, we had an election over the weekend in Hungary.
Yep.
And Viktor Orban, who is, you know, Tucker Carlson's BFF, and, you know, is an authoritarian right-wing nationalist. He's just shy of being Vladimir Putin, but give him time. He's, you know,
he's
working at it.
He's aspiring to it.
He managed to you know, win a re-election, largely because the election was rigged on his behalf.
Of course.
And also because the public, seeing what's happening, you know, it's volatile, right? The voting population is volatile. Well, now suddenly we're looking at France, who's got an election coming up, and everybody assumed that Macron, the current president, would, you know, was going to coast to victory in this new election. Now suddenly it seems to have switched, or it hasn't switched entirely, but the right wing, Marine Le Pen
is back.
is back, and she's gaining quickly. And you know, you're thinking about this dynamic here. What is this about? What are people thinking? And you know, if that were to happen, let's just say Marine Le Pen were to win election and become the new president, what we would find is, well, NATO would fall apart, right? I mean,
right.
That's probably
yep.
the and then suddenly we're in a completely new, unprecedented and very, very unpredictable situation. So this is a very, very, very serious situation, not just, you know, us looking at it from afar and feeling horrible as human beings for what's going on, but because the stakes are immense.
Yep.
And, you know, you're looking at these kinds of, there's a sort of a, you know, a cascading effect, right, with this kind of thing. I mean, you see, I mean, look what happened. It happened here first. We, you
yep.
know, we had Donald Trump.
Yep.
They had Brexit in the UK.
Right.
And you've got Putin making this move in Ukraine, and you have all this kind of stuff, and you can just sort of see that there's a right wing. And I mean, we've been talking about this for years, you and I have, and I've been writing about it for years, and I think there's a whole lot of people who've been watching this phenomenon develop. But there is a right-wing movement in this world right now, and it is starting to see action and activity that goes beyond just sort of political rhetoric and, you know, having some guys marching around and protesting, you know, putting on yellow jackets like they did in France, or, you know, waving around tiki torches like they did in Charlottesville. All that was a portent of something that was happening, something that was growing up in this world. And so, you know, I'm watching this with, you know, more and more and more trepidation, hoping that somehow or another this dynamic shifts. You know, I think the pandemic added to the whole thing,
right?
It just created chaos.
And everybody
was feeling PTSD from all of that.
Right. And plus, because there were months of, you know, people staying home, that they had all of a sudden spare time, and they're going on the computer and they're going down the YouTube rabbit hole and the Facebook rabbit hole, and they're all of a sudden meeting up with other conspiracy theorists and QAnon people. And this shit spread like wildfire.
Yeah, it really did. And was helped along by cynical political actors.
Yep.
Who pushed it and are pushing it. I mean,
still,
look at what's happening in our own Congress right
now.
Unbelievable.
I mean,
well, can't believe what's coming out of their mouth.
I know. Well, you put a piece up on digbysblog.net this morning. The headline reads, "Nearly one-third of the House GOP is pro-Putin." And, 63 Republicans voted against a statement of support for NATO, basically, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's all it was, and a statement, an affirmation of support for pro-democracy,
right? Democratic principles, an alliance founded on
democratic
principles, and 63.
It couldn't be more anodyne than it was.
Right.
I mean, it's like what were they thinking? And you know, here's the thing. I mean, I said pro-Putin, and you know, that's probably a bit hyperbolic, but
not really.
But you know, this is what has been happening here. And I, you know, I went back and looked, and we've been having votes on the situation in Ukraine for the last month or so, right?
Mm-hmm.
Starting in the beginning of March, you know, when the whole thing happened. And there was, you know, about the sanctions, and there was, you know, can't remember what the other thing was. There were a couple of votes. It started out with just two weirdos voting against whatever it was.
Right.
And, you know, let's just make a point here. On the left, you've got, you know, I mean, Barbara Lee, who I think we can trust her, that she's not a warmonger, don't
right?
you?
I
think if she's for something, we can trust that it isn't just some militaristic, opportunistic, you know, chance
well,
to
yeah.
go and,
keep
and
in
wage
mind,
war, right?
The only member of Congress who voted against us going into Iraq 20
and
years
Afghanistan.
Ago. And Afghanistan.
You know, I mean,
right.
She is I use her as my lodestar.
Yep.
You know, if she,
yep.
You know, so she has not voted against any of this stuff, right?
Yep.
And neither have, you know, has AOC or the squad generally. I think there was one vote that Ilhan Omar and Cori Bush voted against. And
right.
It was some kind of a funding thing, but it wasn't, you know, anything terribly important. But it started off with two right-wing weirdos voting against it, all the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next vote that came up, there were like eight right-wing weirdos voting against it. Then there was another vote, and it started to get to the point where there were about 20 of them who were, you know, this is the Marjorie Taylor Greene, Matt Gaetz, Paul Gosar,
Lauren Boebert. Right.
Yeah, and so they were all voting against it. Then all of a sudden, last night, they had this vote, and 63 of them. And I'm going, oh, my God, this is growing. This faction now, 63 Republicans in the House, that's almost a third of the caucus. That is a huge faction, and they are going to have a lot of say in what goes on. I mean, we haven't seen Kevin McCarthy stand up to any of these people.
And
they're
all
Trumpers.
Right. And he won't. Because
what are they going to do? Are they going to break up NATO? I mean, I don't even know what they're going to do. But, you know, we can do, I don't think we have to you know, look too deeply into their policy papers to figure it out. This faction within the GOP, and this is a reflection of, you know, the right fringe becoming mainstream, not only in the voting population anymore. It's not only among the Trumpers. This is becoming a bigger group within the mainstream of the Republican Party and the establishment party in Washington. It's not just Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert making fools of themselves at the State of the Union.
No, it's all of them. And it's the fact that Kevin McCarthy didn't do anything about any of this. The one member of his caucus that he admonished was Madison Cawthorn, and not because of any of this propagandist bullshit, but because he alleged that members of his own party were snorting cocaine and having sex parties, which is absurd when you think about it, but because who would want to have sex with them? But
I don't even want to think about it. That's not an image I need in my head.
But that's what that's where Kevin McCarthy draws the line. It's just amazing. By the way,
they got all upset. The Republicans, you know, you can say anything, but don't say
we're having sex. and I love that he did a key bump. Like, excuse me?
Yeah,
like anybody knows what a key bump is.
I'm telling you, I grew up, you know, at a time when there were a lot of drugs around, and I had to look that one up.
Well, I figured it was for a while. Right.
Let's just say that I think Madison knows his way around, you know,
cocaine. Yes, drugs.
White powder, yeah.
And plus,
the Peruvian marching powder. Yes,
everything about that guy is just shameful.
There's something wrong with him.
Wrong with him.
I don't know what exactly is going on there, but the guy is way out there.
And you know what?
I guess he serves a purpose. He makes the rest of them look normal.
And his opponent 2 years ago for that seat was a really good candidate, Mo Davis, who was a colonel, who you know, headed up, I believe, prosecutions at Gitmo. I mean, this is the real deal. But because he had a D next to his name, they vote for this idiot who didn't graduate college, who is a fuck off. He's just an idiot.
He's a complete liar and a phony.
Everything.
I mean, virtually everything he's said
everything.
About himself is a lie.
Yes. And that they vote for him over a decorated, you know, former military colonel. It's just amazing to me.
It says everything about the Republican base, Nicole.
It really does.
It tells you everything you need to know. There was a time when somebody like that, when that kind of contrast, there would have been, you know, people in the Republican Party would have gone, okay, come on now. You know, we're not voting for this kid. You know, and let's not be idiots.
Right.
And, you know, it's not like Mo Davis was some, you know, far left hippie. I mean, you know, he was just a mainstream, normal,
centrist
average Democrat.
Good guy. Yeah. Like, really good guy. And this, when I heard who was running against him, I thought, oh, good, because Mo Davis will beat him. When I heard this idiot won, I was perplexed. But look at who's voting, and look who's telling them who to vote for. I got to tell you, there's breaking news that is the perfect analogy or metaphor. I always get it mixed. Somebody's going to make this connection. Digby, you can do it in your next column. You heard the story about the fox that had been running around D.C., Capitol Hill, and they caught it. Well, they caught it after it had bitten a few people, including a member of Congress. It apparently bit 9 people before they captured it yesterday. Well, the fox, turns out, was rabid.
Oh, my God. Now, well, that explains why it was biting people.
Yes.
They don't usually do that.
Right?
So oh, my God.
A rabid fox is destroying, just saying, there's a metaphor for someone to run with.
It's wreaking
right
havoc on Capitol Hill.
Hello.
I think we're going to call her Marjorie. How about that?
Who likes
we're
the fox.
Name that fox Marjorie.
Yes.
She did look a little bit. I mean, I could see the resemblance there for sure.
Yeah.
Ugh. Wow. Yeah. Wow. Oh, the fox was rabid. That's just
tested
sad.
Positive for rabies. Oh. Unbelievable.
Well, I guess that makes sense.
Yes, it does.
I was wondering. I'm going, since when would a fox run around biting people? That doesn't make sense. They run away. You know, I mean, they're not going to.
And we know foxes are always been rabid, but the fox, not news network, not the animals, but. You know.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. So, yeah, I guess maybe it's made its way to the animal, the actual animal kingdom.
Oh, my
kingdom.
God. Hold on a second. David is here.
I'm sorry. I object vehemently to even the idea of calling the fox Marjorie. A fox is the word fox is used to refer to an attractive woman. She is Mrs. Ed.
Oh, Mrs. Ed.
I see. Okay. Can we call her Sarah, maybe?
We can call her Sarah. Oh, God, Sarah. Oh, she's back. Really? What, haven't we had enough of Sarah Palin? And she dares. She had. Okay, this shows it's really opposite world. She actually said she had comments to make about Ketanji Brown Jackson, saying that she impugned her knowledge and intelligence. It's like, are you kidding
me?
Oh, my
God.
Like, come on. This is opposite world. And the inmates are now running the asylum, it seems. The crazy is just expanding. I remember the first time I saw coverage of one of the former guy's rallies and saw people in the crowd with Q signs. And I thought, oh, that's really creepy. And thank God it's not spread. It's, you know, it's that's a curiosity. It's weird. And then now they're everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And in fact, I mean, that's another case where you see it in having infiltrated into the mainstream establishment of the GOP. And this time it's not just, you know, a small, I shouldn't even say a small faction, a substantial faction like it is in the House of these kind of wild backbencher types. What they did to Ketanji Brown Jackson is one of the most ugly things I have ever seen. It is so grotesque that it kind of made me sick to my stomach when I was watching it. I'm just going, really, you guys are actually going here. And I remember saying in a group that I'm in online, you know, sort of saying, you know, I think this is going to be really bad. And everybody assured me, oh, no, it won't. Mitch wants to make this a smooth confirmation so that they can show that they're not, you know, crazy people like the Democrats are, since he's going to, you know, since it doesn't make a difference on the court anyway. He's not going to let them do anything disgusting. And I disagreed. I said, look, they don't do this for strategic reasons alone, and sometimes not at all. They do this because this is an opportunity for them to play to their base in the most grotesque, you know, insulting way possible, and that is what gets their voters off. They know that that really works for them.
Yeah.
And so, boy, did they ever come through on that. I mean, the stuff that they said in this whole, and you mentioned Q, which is what made me think about it, this QAnon thing, that's what the whole pedophile thing is
about.
Yes. I had a relative in 2020, distant relative, who refused to vote for Joe Biden because she had read online on QAnon that he was a pedophile.
Oh,
and I'm going,
God.
You believe this stuff? Yeah, yes, I believe he is. And I think there's more of this out there than people realize, and I think these Republicans know there's more of this out there than they realize, and they push this stuff. And now it's everywhere, right? You've got it down in Florida. Well, where you are, the whole, you know...
Yep.
Grooming, you know, the
it's
don't say
insane.
Gay stuff with the grooming thing. I mean, that's all Q. That's Q. It comes from Q.
And they've incorporated it into their party, I would say platform, but they don't have a platform.
No,
into
it's their ideology.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah.
Their
ideology is hate. That's basically it.
But, and so now, here we are. Just a few months, not even a few months out. I was just doing my calendar, putting all the primary dates in there because the primaries for the midterms begin in a few weeks. We've got on May 3rd, Indiana and Ohio primaries. And that may be the first one. But yeah, just a few weeks away, primary season is here. And the polls are horrific. They're horrible for the Democrats. Mm-hmm. And I can get that they're bad for the Democrats, but they're better for Republicans? I can understand saying, fuck them all. They all suck. I get that. But you'd want to put them back in power? I cannot grok. I just don't.
Well, that's what's the same thing that's happening in France, like
right.
we just talked about.
Right.
It happened in Hungary. This right wing movement in the face of this of the feeling of chaos. I think a lot of the and some of this has to do with the pandemic too. This sense that life has been turned upside down. I think there's just sort of a collective PTSD that a lot of people are feeling, and rather than and they can't really, you know, they're unable to be rational about what the issues are. They're just sort of lashing out. And so they look at I don't think they particularly like Republicans. It's just that they're just lashing out at whoever is in charge. And I think some of it is just sort of petulance. They said, we voted for Democrats, and you haven't solved all our problems, and, you know, gas prices are high, and everything sucks. So, you know, so they're doing that. And then, of course, you know, there's the historical thing. But here's the thing. You know, this is the, and you know this better than anybody because you're in Florida. This agenda that Rick Scott put out is the most unbelievably outrageous, out of the mainstream freak show of an agenda that we could have imagined. I mean, you know, Mitch McConnell is going, whoa, Rick, you know, come on. And Rick Scott is not backpedaling, and they are all, you know, this is, if the Democrats have their wits about them, they will make these Republicans run on that agenda. That is the official agenda.
There's
the only
question,
one that's
though.
Out there.
Do the Democrats have their wits about them? Because
well,
I don't hear any of them talking about this.
You know what I hear about?
What?
I hear on TV all day long, and, you know, I'm just going on what I'm seeing on the TV like every other observer.
Yeah.
They're telling reporters that they're just, you know, so depressed because they know they're going to lose.
Oh, my God.
And they know that if they're, so they're losing and it's just so bad, and they just don't, and the reporters are all saying, I've never heard them so depressed.
Oh, my God.
Great, that's really beautiful. You know, really good job, guys. You know, get out there and tell your reporter buddies all about how bad everything is, and then, you know, and then have them, you know, quote you on background or whatever. And, you know, all that does is basically, you know, it's defeatism. And they have plenty to work with. You've got Donald Trump out there endorsing the most fringy, freaky, right-wing nuts you can find. They're absolutely the worst. These people are, I mean, really, they're Looney Tunes. They're even worse than Todd Akin, you know, the last crew.
Right.
And so they've got that. They've got Donald Trump hovering in the background. He won't shut up, and he's getting more and more, you know, anxious to get out there in public and stump for these people. So they've got that to run against. We repudiated him last time, right? 7 million votes.
Right.
They voted to, you know, to get that guy out. And then you've got this thing with Rick Scott and what they plan to do. And then you've got all these people like, you know, Jim Jordan and Kevin McCarthy going on and on about how they're going to, you know, probably going to impeach Joe Biden in the House the minute that they get in. They're going to do what they're going to have, for sure, going to have Hunter Biden up there, you know, basically putting him in the pillory up there. And then you're going to have, you know, over in the Senate, if there is another Supreme Court opening, there might be.
They won't even give him a hearing.
No. Mitch said, he said this yesterday, he said, well, we're going to force Joe Biden to moderate. You know, really?
Yeah.
You have
Lindsey Graham saying, if we controlled the Senate, she wouldn't have even gotten a hearing. Now, he voted for her confirmation less than a year ago to the D.C. Circuit. So, you know, they're all fucking liars and hypocrites, and we could scream that from the rooftops. It doesn't matter.
Well, you know, that's the thing. I mean, the Democrats have to have a message. And to me, and you know, they're going, well, we're going to run on our achievements. I'm going, you know what? Everybody is upset right now.
Yep.
Gas prices are high. Everything, people don't, you know, yes, it's true. The unemployment numbers are magnificent. They're great. In another time, that would be a great message to run on. You know, look, the economy's back. Aren't we terrific?
Right.
But that's just not how people are feeling. Whether you like it or not, people are are sour, they're depressed, they're angry. It feels like the world is coming to an end.
Well,
so you're not
does.
Going to win on your achievements on the, you know, on the infrastructure bill, right? I mean, that's just not going to happen.
Right.
I mean, besides which, all the Sturm und Drang that we had to go through just to get that done, and now, and then Manchin and Sinema, you know, basically nuking any chance of doing anything more. That message is not going to resonate. So get off it. It's not going to happen. What are we feeling now? We're feeling fear and anger. Deploy it. Deploy it against the other side.
Right.
Because people should be, you know, afraid, and they should be angry at what these other people are doing. And they need to go after them and absolutely, you know, use everything in their arsenal to paint them for what they are and warn people. If you vote for these guys, if you think somehow things are going to, you know, get better for you, get a clue. They're going to get worse.
Right.
These guys, look at what they did before and look what they're planning to do now. Here's Rick Scott. He wants to sunset Social Security every 5 years and then have them vote on it again.
Yes.
I mean,
unbelievable. You know, and it's times like this. I really miss Joel Silberman. Joel Silberman was right. He could talk to these elected officials and get them to move their thoughts in the right place and to channel them into an energy to get them out there. And unfortunately, we lost him a few years ago to pancreatic cancer. But there are other people who, you know, maybe not as wonderfully as Joel could do it, but could Drew Weston, Celinda Lake, there are these people who know messaging. The Democrats have always sucked at messaging. They need someone to show them the way, and it seems like nobody's in control over there.
Well, I think what they do is they go and do these focus groups, so they look at polling, and people tell the focus group, I just hate it when everybody fights. I want to hear about positive things. I really want to hear about what's good. And everybody else nods, oh, yes, me too. That's what I really want to hear, too. It's bullshit.
Yep.
You know, I mean, at this point, you know, that's like assigning an algorithm to figure something out. There's a political instinct that exists in this world. And everything about it, to me, says that we're in an era of partisan polarization, and it's a fight. And it's not about, you know, touchy-feely, let's all feel good about ourselves stuff. It just isn't where we are as a country. It just isn't. It's as a culture, as a world, really.
I know.
So you have to go with the flow of what is going on out there, going up against it by saying, well, we've got a positive message of sunshine and hope at a time when people just can't hear
it.
I mean, they can't even hear that they're paychecks are bigger. They can't even hear that the pandemic is kind of, you know, seemingly coming under control here and we're getting back to normal. They can't hear that unemployment is way down. They can't hear any of that. So they're going to hear about the great infrastructure bill that's going to make some bridges appear, you know, 5 years from now.
Yeah,
ever.
And
it's not going to work.
Right. And we're not seeing that because the states now have control of the money. And so the Republicans who run the states are taking credit for everything.
Yeah,
that was botched. You know, it's just yeah, it's very difficult to just to go along knowing what's happening out there.
Know.
You know,
and it's not the substance of what the Democrats are doing. I'm not really arguing with that. I think Biden's done as good a job as you can imagine under the circumstances.
Under the circumstances,
with the diva twins that put a big wrench into their into
everything.
The legislative
killed
agenda.
Off the Democrats' agenda. I was going to say single-handedly, but they took two of them. Manchin and Sinema totally destroyed. I mean, they should be, you know, the other members of Congress Democrats should be really pissed because things could be a lot different. Certainly a lot better for them if these two didn't stand in the way of this president's agenda.
Yeah, of course it would. You know, I mean, they basically, what they did was basically sabotage the legislative agenda. So
yes, they did.
If you wanted to run on achievements, but look at them and, you know, say, hey, thanks a lot. you know, we you basically made it so that we don't have any. Okay,
that's right.
Thank you very much for that. And in fact, Kyrsten Sinema today, she's quoted in I think it was Axios. You know, Manchin's come out recently saying he's got, you know, a new, if we won't call it Build Back Better, but whatever, it's some kind of a big deal with some substantial money in it to devote to, you know, of course, more fossil fuel development, but also clean energy, and also, I think, prescription drugs,
mm-hmm.
Some good things, and also some bad things. But Democrats are kind of going, well, hell, you know, I guess this is the best
right.
we can do, so, you know, let's see if we can get this done. No.
She said no.
Because he is for raising taxes on rich people. Kyrsten, she doesn't like that. No,
oh
we're not going to raise any taxes. So that's, you know, that's the end of that. I mean, it's one or the other. And I wrote about this earlier. I'm going, hey, everybody, don't get excited about Joe Manchin because his partner in crime over there, wait to hear what she says because she won't tax corporations.
Right.
She doesn't want to tax rich people. For whatever reason, she's decided that that's, you know.
She's Lucy. Lucy pulling the football
yeah.
from Charlie Brown. So, Digby, I just booked somebody for the first time to come on the show. Rachel Bitticoffer is going to be here on Friday.
Mm.
And, you know, she's a political scientist, and she sees the writing on the wall. I have no idea what she's going to say on Friday. She followed me on Twitter last night, and I messaged her. I'm like, wow, thanks for the follow. Will you come on my show? So she'll be here on Friday. But I'm kind of afraid to hear what she has to say because it's not going to be pretty.
No, it won't be pretty because what she's seeing. And by the way, I think, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but just having read her stuff, not recently, but before the last election,
yeah.
that she will agree with me that, you know, running on your achievements isn't going to get her done.
No, right now.
And that you've got to take the fight to the Republicans on this. And you've
got exactly to expose them. That's exactly what she's saying. That I forget the terminology. It's like negative something.
Negative partisanship.
Yeah,
yes.
Negative partisanship. That's mm-hmm. what she's saying. You can't. Things may be great. You can't go there because that's not where the country is.
Right.
Negative
right.
partisanship
I mean,
is
room,
what.
You got to read the room, right?
You got to read the room.
And I don't know. I mean, you always hear these people, well, we got to talk about kitchen table issues and we're going to have to, you know, and what that means under the circumstances that, you know, inflation is driving everybody crazy. What are they going to do? I mean, what do they say about that? Are they going to blame Joe Biden?
Right.
Are they going to run against him?
It's not just here. Inflation is happening globally. And now the next thing that we haven't even talked about yet is going to be food shortages because mm-hmm. Russia and Ukraine provide most of the grain for the world and everything's going to be shut down. There are going to be serious food shortages around the planet. Again, these aren't just issues here in the U.S. Inflation is everywhere. Other countries are feeling it too. But
if
you watch
the we are in some cases.
Right. But if you watch the corporate media, it sounds like it's just here and that's why they
yeah.
can blame Joe Biden. Well, that's not the case.
Yeah, why don't they go to visit some gas stations in Germany? They're all
really?
Over there.
Oh my God.
Why don't they go do
Germany.
Some gas
Hold
stations
on.
In Europe?
Patrick, I have a listener in Germany and Patrick, oh my God, I meant to pull this email. Let me see if I can find it quickly. He sent me an email last night and he said, tell people to stop whining. The gas is $4 here. It's like $9 a gallon. I'm looking for the email now. Let's see if I can find it. I thank you for reminding me. So yes. No, I don't see it. Damn it. I should have. I probably saved it somewhere and don't know where I saved it to so that I could read it today.
Don Lemon system. Or, you know, I don't know, one of these other network anchors for Jake Tapper or somebody who they've got over there who are doing nothing but sort of, you know, standing in front of, you know, I don't know, some rubble. And they're not really reporting anything. They're just doing their shows from there. Maybe they could take a walk or take a little trip over to Germany or take a little hop over to France or something. And let's see what their gas prices are like. Let's see what their inflation is like.
Right.
Maybe people have to have that illustrated for them to understand that this is a global problem. You know, look, we're coming off of a once in a century global crisis with the pandemic, and it's not over yet. I mean, that's still, you know, hanging out there as another, you know, shoe to drop if there's a horrible new variant that comes along. You know, we're in a period of immense turmoil. You can't run elections. You can't win by trying to ignore that and act like, you know, everything's, you know, look, we're on the right track.
Yep.
You know, it's almost morning in America. You know, it's
okay.
Like,
yep.
No, you know, nobody's going to hear that. And nobody wants to hear it. It sounds like a loser
yep.
saying that. And nobody wants. And that opens the door to something horrible. In our case,
yep.
it's Donald Trump.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the case of people in Europe, I mean, who the hell knows,
yeah,
you know,
so
what's going to be next?
I found the email. He wrote, "Hi, Nicole. I hear a lot of whining about gas being so expensive at $4.25 a gallon on your side. You may share with your listeners that over here in Germany and France, a gallon premium or diesel is over $9 U.S. right now. So stop whining and buy sensible cars," he wrote.
Exactly. Boy, I'm for that. You should put that one up on your
Yes, I will. I'll tweet it out because Patrick from Germany, who's been sending me all kinds of stuff, like back information about life in Germany. Thank you, Patrick, uh-huh. for that.
Yes,
so,
that's very informative and yep. very useful, I think.
That's right.
So, anyway.
Yeah, so, Digby, I always appreciate your input. I knew today was going to be a tough one because life right now is tough.
It is.
It's just
awful. On a personal level, with the loss of Eric Bullard, and on a global level and everywhere else, it's just, this is not a good day.
Not a good day.
But what can we say? Maybe tomorrow will be better. How about that?
Well, that's all we can hope for. It's got to get better because it can't get a whole lot worse. Well,
yes,
I don't
exactly.
want to say that because it's
no,
tempting
don't say
fate.
That. It can get worse.
Knocking
Nicole,
on wood laminate.
Can.
I know. We learned that during the Trump reign
exactly.
of terror.
Never,
there
never,
is no bottom.
Assume.
There is no bottom because, you know, you remember when you were kids, you dig to China? Yeah, there's no bottom.
Yeah.
It just goes.
Well, after all, there's Marjorie Taylor Greene saying that anybody who votes for Ketanji Brown Jackson is pro-pedophile.
Right,
so,
pro-pedophile.
Yes, it can get worse.
Oh, my God. Oh, Digby, find her, follow her on Twitter, Digby56, and visit digbysblog.net, and find her at salon.com, too. Digby, as always, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
That's always my pleasure. Thank you. Have a great week, and we'll talk soon. All right, so that's it. We're done. for the day, anyway, tomorrow's Thursday. Howie will be here. Lots to talk with Howie Klein about. And then, as you heard me mention to Digby, Rachel Bitticoffer will be here on Friday. Actually, we're going to tape it tomorrow. So if you have like a burning question for her, let me know so I can get it in there. I'm excited to talk to her. I don't always agree with her, but I think she's kind of brilliant. And I'm honored that she's going to be here. So try to keep your head up. What she will give us on Friday, I hope, is a strategy with which to navigate these midterm elections, because we've got to be vocal because it's up to us. Like I said, the primaries are here. We got no time to spare, and everything is at stake. When I say everything, I mean everything. All right. With that, I'll see you tomorrow, and I'll leave you with the news. Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Airstrikes continue in the bombed out and leveled city of Mariupol after Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky told the United Nations Security Council on Tuesday via video hookup that Russian forces had committed war crimes in the parts of Ukraine where they recently left, likening them to terrorists.
They were killed in their apartments, houses, blowing up grenades. Civilians were crushed by tanks while sitting in the cars in the middle of the road, just for their pleasure. They cut off limbs, slashed their throats. Women were raped and killed in front of their children. Their tongues were pulled out only because the aggressor did not hear what they wanted to hear from them. So this is no different from other terrorists such as Daesh.
Zelensky cited gruesome images of alleged atrocities in the town of Bucha, and then he challenged the United Nations to take forceful action and kick Russia out of the Security Council. And he said if they can't do that, then they should just dissolve the chamber entirely. Diplomats called for investigation of the civilian deaths in Bucha that have ignited outrage around the world, but Russia's Security Council veto prevented them from doing anything. Then Russia's UN ambassador told the council that Ukraine's evidence that Russian troops killed civilians in Bucha was fake. As President Biden announces even more sanctions against the Russians in response, American authorities, working with Spanish authorities on Tuesday, seized a Russian oligarch's huge yacht. Attorney General Merrick Garland said, quote, "Today marks our task force's first seizure of an asset belonging to a sanctioned individual with close ties to the Russian regime. It will not be the last." All right. Meanwhile, here at home, Republican Sharia law is spreading. In Oklahoma, the Republican-controlled legislature passed a near-total ban on all abortions on Tuesday. The bill would make it a felony to perform an abortion except to save the life of a pregnant woman in a medical emergency. That's it. A violation would carry a prison term of up to 10 years and a $100,000 fine. Now, Oklahoma is just the latest Republican-led state to pass new abortion restrictions, setting up opportunities for the Supreme Court's newly packed right-wing majority to roll back abortion rights guaranteed by the Roe v. Wade decision. The bill in Oklahoma, which the governor is expected to sign, came after the state became a destination for women from Texas who were seeking legal abortions after their state banned the procedure after 6 weeks, which is before most women even know they're pregnant. Just sickening. Former President Barack Obama returned to the White House for the first time in 5 years on Tuesday to join President Biden as he signed an executive order telling federal agencies to find ways to improve Medicare and the Affordable Care Act. Biden also called for lowering costs of the federal health insurance programs. The Biden administration announced it would close the so-called family glitch, which blocks premium assistance through Obamacare for people getting health care through a relative's work. Republicans, of course, accused Biden of trampling the authority of Congress. But the fact is that this could help 200,000 uninsured Americans get comprehensive health insurance while making coverage cheaper for another million more people. It's something the White House can do on its own without Congress, despite what the Republicans say. As expected, the White House has extended the student loan payment pause through August 31st. The pandemic-era relief for borrowers was set to end next month. The extension means that some 41 million people will get a few additional months without interest accruing on their debt and with more time to save money. Though saving right now, not necessarily in the cards. And critics are asking for a more permanent solution to the student loan problem. Progressive politicians and activists want the debt forgiven altogether. So, Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson is one step closer to being confirmed as the first Black woman to sit as a justice on the U.S. Supreme Court. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer had to file a discharge petition and hold a vote in the whole chamber in order to move the nomination out of a tie in the committee. But with the votes of Republicans Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, and Mitt Romney, that wasn't an issue. The final vote will happen either Thursday or Friday. But there's one more bill being held up by Republicans. It's another round of much-needed COVID relief. A $10 billion compromise package is at risk, well, has been stalled in the Senate because of a partisan fight over whether to allow a vote on an amendment to reinstate the Title 42 restrictions that had been used to deny migrants asylum claims at the U.S.-Mexican border. Chuck Schumer warned Republicans on Tuesday not to take the bill hostage by insisting on a vote. Title 42, in case you didn't know, was the Trump policy that allowed mass deportations with zero regard to claims of asylum due to the fear of COVID. This despite U.S. law that guarantees the right to seek asylum and prohibits sending people back to places where they'll be prosecuted or tortured. So first it was Jared Kushner sitting for 6 hours of questioning by the January 6th committee earlier this week. And on Tuesday, it was Ivanka's turn. Yeah, the former president's daughter and one of his closest advisors answered questions for a reported 8 hours. Congressman Benny Thompson, the chairman of the panel, said she was not, quote, chatty, but had been helpful to the investigation. She's one of more than 800 witnesses the committee has already interviewed, and the first of Trump's children known to speak with the committee. And finally, How are you doing in this, the age of rising gas prices, grocery prices, rent, and, well, general inflation? Well, the Wall Street Journal just issued a new analysis that shows median pay for the top executives of the S&P 500 companies, I hope you're sitting down, rose to $14.2 million last year. That's up from an already record $13.4 million for the same companies just 1 year earlier. Incredibly, most business leader salaries increased by at least 11%. And for nearly one-third of them, their pay rose by at least 25%. So far, David Zaslav of Discovery had the highest salary disclosed among those S&P 500 companies at $247 million. That's followed closely by Amazon's Andy Jassy, with his compensation valued at nearly $213 million. I know, you're wondering, what about the rank-and-file employees? Well, their pay rose, too, in some cases, by 3.1% or less at half of the companies. At one-third of the companies, median employee pay declined year over year. The Journal writing, quote, CEOs at roughly half the companies were paid at least 186 times what their median worker made in 2021. That's up from 166 times in the year before the pandemic and 156 times in 2018, the first year that nearly all S&P 500 companies reported median employee pay. There's something really rotten in the U.S. labor system. I got the news. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.